if you've got 1,000 true fans, 1,000 people who are going to be passionate about what you're talking about and really resonate with your message, and if those 1,000 people will just spend $100 with you a year, and if you've got a lean business like what Brenton has got, then you're going to be sitting close to $100,000 in profit, and you're going to be able to quit your day job.
You're listening to The Growth Booth, the show focused on achieving lifestyle freedom through online businesses. Whether you're looking for step-by-step strategies to start building an online business, simple game plans to grow your business, or proven lifestyle freedom frameworks, you are in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the thousands of listeners already in growth mode.
Aidan Booth here. Welcome to episode 25 of The Growth Booth, where today I'm going to be talking with a special guest that we've got, and I'll introduce you to him in just a second, about how you can turn your passions into profit and how you can build a really great lifestyle business around something that you might be passionate about or something that you might have expertise in. Now, the person that I've got on the call today is the founder of Effortless Swimming, which is a website that I sort of stumbled upon but have grown to love, because as many of you probably know, I am a swimming enthusiast, and the person that's here today has been quite helpful with me improving my stroke, and part of that has led me to see that, wow, he's actually doing some amazing things with Effortless Swimming. He's got YouTube videos that have got millions of views. He's got hundreds of podcast episodes, so he's well ahead of me in that regard, and I've been asking him for all kinds of tips around there. And it just seems like a really good guy who's found a good balance between lifestyle, family, business, travel, and the works. So Brenton, thank you so much for coming on here today. This is Brenton Ford from Effortless Swimming. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aidan. You were on my podcast a little while ago because we were exchanging emails, and you'd had some great results with the swimming, you know, with the swimming tips. Yeah. And so it's nice to return the favor.
No, that's right. So for those of you that are swimmers, I managed to knock a significant amount of time, probably like 15 seconds off my 100 meters, which is absolutely enormous. And a lot of that was thanks to the grueling program that Brenton had me going through throughout COVID. So you've got swimming in your genes. You've I think your background is that your family has been in swimming. And you've done a lot of coaching. You know, you've competed nationally in Australia, which is, you know, one of the strongest swimming countries in the world. Lots and lots of coaching. When was it that you started starting building your own business and eventually building an online business around swimming?
Yeah, as a teenager, when I was going through school, rather than getting a job at McDonald's, I started selling things on eBay. And I thought, well, this is cool. Like, I can actually make money by not having to go and trade my time like a lot of my friends were. I could just sell things on eBay. So it sort of started there. I really enjoyed the business side of things. I hired some friends to come and pack the items that I was selling. And yeah. Then when I went to university, I started swim coaching, just the club at the university at Melbourne there. And I also did a business degree, and I thought, I love to coach, I love swimming, and I really enjoy the business side of things. So in my final year of university, I thought I'm going to try and get this thing started. And it started as an online business. I started with one freestyle course and started it that way.
Wow. And what were you selling on eBay?
So I started with the mini disc players, like the Sony mini disc players. I realized I could buy them from the US for, let's say, $200. I could sell them for $300 here. So I managed to sell a couple of those, and then the market caught up. And then as a 15, 16 year old, I found that I could buy some big name brands from India that were probably not legit in terms of like polo shirts and then sell them here in Australia. So I stopped that when I was 18. I thought, yeah, probably not going to get away with that for long. That's when I sort of stopped it. But
The reason my ears pricked up when you said that is because my first online gig was on eBay as well. Not on eBay, but I was buying these camera SD cards from eBay in Hong Kong. and I was sending them to New Zealand. And in New Zealand, we've got a site called Trade Me, which is essentially the same as eBay. And I was selling them on there. So I would send these things over. They'd cost me maybe like 20 or 30 bucks. I'd add another 20 or 30 bucks to them. And I was at university as well. And I'd be, you know, pocketing a bit of extra pocket money. But the thing that got me was that I found myself going to the post office all the time and realizing that this is not as scalable. But it was kind of like a gateway into this online world. And then I realized, oh, you know, I can do things as an affiliate. Before that, I didn't even know what affiliate was. I probably didn't even know what the word meant. And, you know, so that sort of led on there. So anyway, back to your story. You got started. And so did you start the online stuff with Effortless Swimming back when you were still at university there?
Yeah, so I did it was Bachelor of Business Entrepreneurship was the course. And I mean, I think you can only teach so much in terms of running a business at uni, but that was the course that appealed to me. And so I did it. And then the last year was you could either choose to go and do like a placement at one of the big accounting firms, like I think it was KPMG.
That doesn't sound very entrepreneurial.
Exactly right. Yeah. It was either that or you can, you know, start your own thing. So I thought, yeah, I'm just going to start my own thing. And I didn't quite launch it at the end of uni, but then the year after I finally got everything together and started selling. I think I went to like a 3-day course. It was about online business and sort of learnt most of the stuff there. And that's most of the things I actually put into place, not from the stuff I actually learned at uni.
This was going back to like 2008, 2009, somewhere around there, was it?
Yeah, yeah, that's roughly. Right. 2008 was my last year of uni and then started 2009. And over that time, like it didn't turn into a real business, I wouldn't say, for probably another like 5 or 6 years. I was still pretty young. I didn't know what I was really
doing. What were you actually doing? Like what were you doing as part of those initial stages of your online business way back then?
Yeah, so I had this freestyle online video course, and that was my one product, and it was basically just like marketing that for the first couple of years. I think I added some other courses as well and some training plans, and but it was pretty small scale, and I wasn't doing anything in person for probably 5 years, I think. Yeah, you know, about 5 years.
That's like hundreds of dog years ago, thousands of dog years ago, like 2008, yeah. That was the wild, wild
this
west.
This is when YouTube started.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was around about when Facebook kicked off as well. It was somewhere around then. So, I mean, this is like a long time ago in internet years, and it was completely different. I can still remember way back then I used to make my web pages using software called Dreamweaver, and I sucked at it. So I was quite limited by what I could actually do, whereas nowadays you've got all kinds of page builders and so on and so forth. So a lot's changed, fair to say. Social media was non-existent back then, whereas now, you know, I see your stuff on social media and I see your videos that go out, and some of your videos have got millions of views on YouTube. It's absolutely phenomenal. So talking about your business and where it is today, like fast forward to where it is today, you've got hundreds of customers all around the world. What does your business look like? Like, how are these customers? Because how do you teach them swimming remotely?
That was one of my main concerns going into it. Was I've taught people face to face for a long time, and are they actually going to be able to improve? Either teaching them remotely, if they send me a video and I analyze their technique, will that actually work if I'm not there? Or if I put together an online course, can people actually get better without me being there? And that was probably the first hurdle I had to get over, because as a coach, as a teacher, I'm probably a bit of a perfectionist, and it's like I only want them to be able to, like, I want to make sure they get a result and make sure that I can, you know, make sure that they're doing the right thing. But I think as a coach, you've kind of got to let that go and just put your information together and just put it out there, and people will do with it what they want, and they'll take it, they might interpret it their own way, but you've got to actually put it out there to be able to let them, you know, decide what to do with it. So that was a hurdle I had initially. But today, I guess my business is, we run clinics in Australia. So we've had probably 6,000 or 7,000
people
do our clinics.
These clinics are in person, I take it.
Yeah, so in-person clinics. We keep them to six people at a time. So they're small group clinics. Yeah. We did used to run them up to 24 swimmers with two coaches there, but I found that the quality wasn't as good. So we just made them smaller group clinics, higher price, and we do underwater filming and analysis. So it's much more hands-on and the results are a lot better. So yeah, we've had 6,000 to 7,000 people do those clinics over the last, well, since we started running them. Then we've got our online membership as well. So we've got just under 2,000 inside that. And then we've got some standalone courses as well, which I think you first came in on, like a $10.
$10 I came in on what we would probably call a lead magnet or a tripwire sort of a thing. I think it was like $5. And it was, you know, it really blew me away. I think that was a real masterclass in marketing. And what people should strive to do is I paid $5 or $7 for, I think it was 5 videos or something like that, but it was actually a lot more than that. It was just amazing value. And I thought, holy crap, you know, if I can get this for $5, imagine what I can get for the next level up. So I did buy the next level up, and then I was doing a 8-week freestyle course, and I got through it, and I sent you an email. And I didn't even realize it, but it turns out in that same membership, there were all these other things as well. There was like, okay, there was this and that and the other. And then I remember saying to you, like, holy crap, man, I didn't even know all this stuff was here. And then I must be like the perfect customer, because then I got the individual one-on-one analysis, which is where I filmed myself swimming in the pool, underwater, on top, all around. And you did this amazing analysis of that, which was awesome. So I guess I've been through multiple parts of it there, but I thought the way that you set that up was just wonderful, especially because you could tell that you were really getting good value. And the first thing that I thought, and this would be, if you can achieve this in your marketing, where people are saying, wow, that was really good value for money, then I think that's a good sign that, you know, you're on the right track there. So I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, and so the product you're talking about, maybe a year ago, I think I set it up, perhaps a little bit longer now, but we called it the 5-day catch challenge. And so if you're listening to this, the catch is it's kind of the most important part of your freestyle stroke. So if you get a really good catch, then often you'll swim faster. So I thought, all right, I'll do this 5-day course. I'm going to charge $10 for it, really cheap. And I'm going to promise you'll take 5 seconds off your 100-meter time in 5 days, or you get your money back. So it's a big promise, and with a money-back guarantee. And we've had probably 7,000 people do that course now, and that's led to a lot of those people then becoming members, because they see that, you know, they then know that you can actually help them with their swimming. So that's been a really big thing.
I think it's brilliant how it's an impulse buy, and that for someone that's into that. Like shaving 5 seconds off, if you sort of think of, for someone that might be able to relate easier to running, like for shaving a certain amount of time off running a distance or swimming a distance, it's quite huge. So and it's such an impulse buy that it's just a no-brainer. So you're probably able to get a lot of people in. I do have a question though about when you actually started the business in the first place. Did you think about, you know, is swimming a monetizable and commercially viable niche? Did you sort of go down that path, or did you just think, you know, I know a lot about swimming, I could do something with swimming?
I didn't think too much about how big's the market and that sort of thing. And when I first started, I was coaching a master swim club, which is basically an adult swim club. And that was initially my target market, because that's all I knew. But going further down the track, I realized that that's not where the market really is. So what ended up happening was master swimmers, a lot of them they'll do their squad, and yeah, they think about technique, but it's more they've swum since they were a kid, and they're happy doing what they're doing for most of them. The biggest opportunity for me was triathletes who aren't great at swimming. It's frustrating for them because they're fit, they're not getting faster. So that's actually our primary market. And so I sort of had to just look at it and go, where's the biggest problem that people are having, and then how can I go about solving it? And that made such a difference when I was actually targeting the right people with the right messaging as well. And like, it's swimming, I didn't know if I'd be able to make a full-time business from swimming. And initially, when the business was quite small, I thought, okay, like, you know, my wife put the foot down after 5 years saying, I'm about to have a kid, I'm not gonna be working for a while, you better make this business work. And I thought, okay, I better figure this thing out. And that was the best thing she could have done, was put a fire under me. And then, yeah, it turned into a real business.
Today's show is brought to you by the Blueprint Academy, a coaching service that I've been providing for about 8 years now. If you're interested in getting one-on-one coaching from me and my team of experts, as well as being able to leverage the resources and infrastructure that I've got in my business, then head over to thegrowthbooth.com/academy to get all the details. I'm passionate about helping people build businesses online, and this is where I can help you. So again, head over to that link, thegrowthbooth.com/academy, and find out how we can help you at the Blueprint Academy today. What have you seen well work for you in terms of generating interest around people that ultimately join your different memberships and buy your different products? Is there one channel in particular that you find works? Obviously, you've got social media, you've got a podcast with hundreds of episodes, you've got videos with millions of views and hundreds of thousands of subscribers. Is it a little bit of everything, or, you know, what have you found that's worked well for you there? Or has it even changed? Maybe over the years you've found that back in the good old days it was easy to do one thing and now it's different.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started making content, which was, you know, videos a couple minutes long, I originally posted it to YouTube, was new at the time, so I posted it there, and there was a whole bunch of other sites like Vidler and a couple others. I can't even remember them now. They're dust now. But yeah, so we just sort of posted it everywhere, and that hasn't really changed. So for me, I think YouTube's probably the main one. We've got our biggest following there. We get the most views there. And for Swing, which is very visual, that's it makes sense. Yeah. But I post that same content on Facebook and on Instagram, and it still gets pretty good reach on those platforms, even though the content that I make is more designed for YouTube. I don't really tailor it for Instagram, which I'd probably get more views if I did. But that said, people still see it. And I've found that over the years that if I've been consistent with it, I try and do one video a week plus a podcast. If I just keep doing that, then people will see my content day in, day out. And sometimes I've had a customer or someone become a customer after like 5 or 6 years of watching videos, and then they're like, okay, I'm ready to join. So just that consistency has made a very big difference. And with the podcast, that's where I think my highest value clients have come from, because if they're willing to listen to me for 30 minutes or, you know, listen to me and a guest, well, then they're, you know, they like you, they trust you. And I've found so many people have come to clinics, come to overseas camps, or become members through the podcast, because you get that relationship through it.
It's probably also the most passionate people would gravitate to something like a podcast, where a YouTube video is something that, you know, you might stumble upon, you might consume it, might come back. But a podcast is almost something that hopefully people will subscribe to and want to hear more and get to know you and feel like they know you personally. And then that's all part of building the relationship until the point where they want to actually spend money with you, which is, you know, going a step further. It sounds like, you know, you've been applying sort of an 80-20 rule approach to content syndication and marketing, where you are creating a piece of content and it's not designed specifically for each platform, but it's designed, let's say, for YouTube or something like that. And then you are spreading it around the different platforms. So, I mean, that's something very similar that that we do in our business. Is that more or less the case with you?
Yeah, that's right. Because I thought, what would be the bare minimum to keep my business running, aside from, you know, delivering the products and that sort of thing and doing the clinics? It's those two pieces of content each week. That's that, even more, it's that 4% that can get 64% of the results. So it's, that's what makes a difference. So I think if I can just keep doing that, well, the business will at least stay the same, but it's still continuing to grow. But yeah, just making sure I'm focused on the right things. And that's definitely number one for me.
And so then, given that you're at the point now where you do have thousands of paying members, and you've got people reaching out to you for one-on-one, and you're doing clinics in person, you've got multiple sort of facets to your business here. What does, you know, a day in the life look like for you when you've got all of this going on? Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I had to say I'm no longer doing any one-on-one face-to-face coaching, because I just don't have I'd have the time, but I wouldn't be that happy doing that, you know, day in, day out, just because of what we have going on. So I just said, all right, the only face-to-face coaching I'm going to do is these small group clinics. And so that freed up a lot of time, because I was spending, you know, a few hours here and there each day with the one-on-ones. So a day for me is like I'll get up and I'll go for either go swimming or go for a surf in the morning. Then I'll often drop the kids at school. I'll do a couple hours of work, and that will be some online video analysis with people that I'm working with there, or create a piece of content, or just basic admin sort of stuff, just keeping on top of things. And then I'm picking up the kids from school, taking them to their sport, and then and that's kind of it for the day. So I'd usually work between 1 to 4 hours a day, and then on the weekends I might have some face-to-face clinics on. So work-wise, it's great. Like lifestyle-wise, this is exactly what I wanted when I first started the business. Was I want to be able to surf when it's good, I want to be able to hang out with the kids, I want to be able to swim, and just do a couple of hours of work each day doing what I love, which is swimming, and I love running the business side of things too.
Well, and what about team? I mean, I assume you've got some people there that help you out with this. What does this look like?
Yeah, I've got two full-time staff in the Philippines. So they customer support. They do the back end for the podcast and YouTube videos and stuff. So they take away a lot of time, which I would otherwise spend replying to customers. So that was such a game changer when I actually got some support staff in, because I'd have, even if initially it was like 4 or 5 emails a day, but that would build up because I'm looking at it going, oh, you know, it's just like the same thing over and over again. So yeah, I've got they're in place. And then I've also got someone on working Saturday, Sundays, doing the support then, just so we don't get built up with tickets and we're getting back to people pretty quickly. So and it's small team, two people or three, I guess, but it makes a difference just getting
them there. I think it's fantastic. You've got a really lean operation. So many people I've seen over the years have gone too hard into hiring people, and they end up spending more time managing people and the business gets too complex, whereas sort of applying the 80-20 rule or the 64-4 rule, you can really drill down to what do I actually need. And you know, if you had a bigger team, maybe instead of working 4 hours a day, you'd end up working 8 hours a day because you'd be trying to keep up with them. So I think it's a really interesting way to do it. How about like a content plan or a content calendar? Do you put something like this together? Because it sounds like you've got content that's coming out quite regularly.
I'll often try and batch some podcast recordings. So I try and be at least a couple of weeks ahead with that, so they're all scheduled. And by batch, I mean, I'll try and schedule, if I've got guests, I'll try and schedule it, you know, between the hours of like 12 and 3 on a Tuesday. And that way I can record a couple. And with the weekly videos, well, at the moment I'm playing sort of catch up. I'm doing one each week and it's publish it as soon as I make it. But I'd often try and have a couple in the bank just to use. And I've got a drive like spreadsheet, and I've just got like a whole bunch of ideas, and I've just sort of brainstormed. If I think of something, I'll just open that up, pop it in. So I've got all these things I can refer to.
I do exactly the same thing. I try to have always a list of, you know, 100 different topics and guests. And in fact, I actually made a mind map of different areas of my life and like hundreds of different topics I could dive into and guests that I could have, so that I never want to get to the point where I'm feeling, oh, you know, what am I going to do now? Because I think that if I got to that, it would, you know, potentially be quite demoralizing in a content driven sort of business there. What about search engine optimization, paid traffic? Do you worry about much of this? Does it take care of itself? What's your take on it?
I haven't done anything SEO related for years now. So probably like 10 years ago, I think I had a bit done, but I haven't done anything since. With the main pages, I try and have them named correctly and all that sort of stuff. But I think we just redid our site a couple of months ago, so it probably would be good to get someone in just to look at that and see what we can improve. Because I reckon we're probably losing some opportunities there, come to think of it. But I mean, because people follow us with social media, and we've got a good following there, and we've got a big email list as well that we've built up over time, they're the more important things for our business. And a lot of it is like referral based as well when people come to clinics. So that's SEO. And what was
social
the other
media
one?
Social media was just the other one I was curious about, whether if you use it very much, and if so, do you use any tools? For example, I use one called Hootsuite that I can post to multiple social media profiles at the same time and sort of manage all of that a lot easier.
Yeah, gotcha. So I used to use that a couple of years ago when we had when we sort of outsourced some of our social media, but now my team will just get the videos and post them to the different platforms there. So we keep it, it's pretty simple, and there is definitely a lot of opportunities for us to do better in some of these things, but what we're doing right now is working really well. And in terms of like time invested, well, it's going really well.
Yeah, sounds like you got a great gig going there. Do you ever sort of have to pinch yourself and think, oh wow, you know, how did this sort of happen? Because from the outside looking in, it's easy for someone to look at what you've done, and I get this sometimes, and think, ah, oh, you know, overnight success. But what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, there has been a fair bit of dedication and just time in general, and compounding results. You know, you've got hundreds of YouTube videos up there. And I always say to people, I think building an online business is much easier if you look at it through a long-term lens and think, where could I be in 5 years' time versus 5 months' time with a membership? But anyway, what's that been like for you? Do you sometimes have to pinch yourself and just, you know, think, oh, wow, look what I've built?
Yeah, well, I think back to when I first started, when I was like 18, 19, I thought, wouldn't it be awesome if I could live by the beach, surf when it's good, and make good money doing that? And I think when I was probably 23, 24, I wrote down a list of about 10 things where I'm like, I want to be, living by the beach, I want to earn this. And I look back at that now and like they're pretty much all ticked off. But I was thinking, in 1 to 2 years' time, I'm going to have this covered. It took way longer than 1 to 2 years' time. But would I change anything about that? Probably not, because I had to grow, I had to learn. And it's just, I think initially when I started in online, the thought was, you know, get rich quick. Everything happens fast because it's online. Yeah. But like, you know, and that can certainly happen for a lot of people, and I'm sure it does. But slow and steady. For me, that always wins the race. And I think I've got a much more solid and steady business as a result of it, rather than just trying to go really hard for 12 months and hoping to.
What I love about what you've done is you've built a business around content, and when you're creating content and putting good content out there, you're claiming a little bit of this digital real estate. And you know, you could put a swim video out 5-10 years ago and you're still getting views on it today. It's putting that one piece of content, a little bit of work, into something that pays you over and over and over again. And when I really analyze the businesses that I see to be the most successful, most of them have an element of this organic traffic coming in. It's very few or very rare that I see a very, very successful online business that is 100% built around paid ads, because paid advertising can be so volatile. You can get shut down quickly. And I think that real maturity comes when you're getting that organic traffic, which content is fantastic for, and content syndication and the way you're doing it is just awesome. Going back to the early wins, I can still remember going on a vacation. It must have been around about 2005, 2006 with my wife here in Argentina. And I was looking at my online accounts and I said to her, wow, you know, I've been making $20 a day for the past month, sort of a thing. And it was just $20 a day. But for me, that was when I had this click and I realized, wow, if I can make $20 a day and it's consistent, then I could make $200 a day. And I think those early wins, really do sort of motivate you. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about getting something going, try to celebrate the small wins and try to think that if you can make $1 online, you can make $100 online. If you make $100 online, you can make $1 million online. Now, wrapping this up here, I'm conscious of your time there, Brenton. If you were starting out, diving into another passion project, you've mentioned surfing, like let's say you wanted to get into the surfing niche, or it could be any niche, triathlon or something, what would you do differently? What would you recommend for someone to do if they have got a passion? Like where do they start? It just seems overwhelming.
Yeah, I think the best place to start would be to probably just initially test what you're offering to start with, and that might just be with someone in person, maybe with a friend. Just check what you're doing is actually working, and that for me, like that gives me a lot of confidence, with some of the stuff that I was teaching with swimming. It's like, yeah, okay, that gives me the confidence to then go out and say, this will help you. And then just finding, for me, like finding an offer that converts, finding something that people will want to buy, and for them it's going to be a win-win-win. So like, let's say for the Catch Challenge, that $10 course, it's like, you got nothing to lose because we'll give you your money back if you don't get better. So that would be probably the second one. And the third one would just be to just back yourself and just put, like, for me, I think of my podcast, for example. I was so afraid of talking. I was afraid of actually being the face of my business because I just wanted to be behind the scenes. You know, I'm like this internet marketer.
Yeah. Normal, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but then when I was like, no, you know what? I'll just be okay with being out there and being the face of it. And then like, no one's going to see your stuff in the beginning anyway. No one's going to see your YouTube video or your podcast, when you first start making it. It's going to take a while to build that traction. So just publish. You'll get better at it. More people will tune in. And because I took a long time to be comfortable with being heard.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you can, one good way to get that validation, if you're sitting there listening to this or watching this on YouTube, is to have a look and see if other people are already doing what you're doing. So if you're in the triathlon space, I mean, you could have a look and find out, are there other people out there that are filming content and selling programs about triathlon? If you're in the, it could be anything, the gardening space, the landscaping space, the car repair space. It could be absolutely anything. But if you can see other people are out there doing it and have got a following, then that's probably some form of validation. And if you can see other people are paying ads for traffic on the likes of social media and search engines and so forth, that's another form of validation. You really don't need that much traffic or that many subscribers to make a really good business. I always remember this story about 1,000 true fans. If you've got 1,000 true fans, 1,000 people who going to be passionate about what you're talking about and really resonate with your message, and if those 1,000 people will just spend $100 with you a year, and if you've got a lean business like what Brenton has got, then you're going to be sitting close to $100,000 in profit, and you're going to be able to quit your day job and live a real lifestyle business. So I think a lot of people think that you need to have a crap load of traffic, lot of visitors, a lot of subscribers, when in reality you just have to have a message that resonates with some people who are passionate about it. Any final thoughts or tips that you would give to people that might be thinking about starting a passion business of their own?
Yeah, trying lots of different things. I think of a friend of mine who he teaches AFL rules, so footy here in Australia, and he's finally sort of stumbled on something that people are interested in, which is these, it's not an online thing at the moment, it's these in-person clinics for kids. And he sort of copied a little bit of what I did in terms of a model, what I was doing with the clinics. And so he's starting to figure his way around that and seeing what people are resonating with. So, and for him, he had his first like five-figure month last month as a result of it. And but he's been going at it for a little while, and it's finally clicked. And so I can see him just sort of leveling up in terms of what he believes is possible and then what he does with the business. So yeah, just trying different things until you find something that works, because I tried a lot of things, they went okay, but then finally just figured out how to run a proper business. And I'm so glad I stuck with it, even though my wife said, you better make this work at the time. Yeah, and that was a couple of years in. So and I think people can do it a lot faster than I've done it, especially with the help of like someone like yourself, where just find someone who's done it before, listen to them and do what they recommend, because you'll just save so much time. And when I have done that and listened to a coach, I've just, my business has sort of gone to that.
Well, it's the same level. Same in everything, isn't it? It's the same with me, with your swimming guidance. I mean, how could I be cruising along at a certain speed, for 10 years, and I come through your course, and then all of a sudden I'm getting a lot faster. It's the same in business. And I think that, at least it seemed like this when I was getting started online, and when you were getting started online, there wasn't the same number of training sort of coaches and sort of blueprints and recipes that you could follow now, or maybe I'm just more aware of them now. It seems like you've got blueprints out there for everything, and there are like thousands of YouTube videos being uploaded every minute. So content is not, finding information is not a problem anymore. You sort of just have to find the right information and put a plan together. Brenton, this has been inspirational. I think what you've done is absolutely amazing. I don't have any YouTube videos with millions and millions of views, so that's absolutely inspirational to me. And I think you've absolutely nailed it with the lifestyle business balance. So thank you once again for being here. And to everyone listening to this, you can find this at episode number 25 on thegrowthbooth.com. And as always, you can also find the video format on YouTube. Just head over to YouTube and go to the search for The Growth Booth or on your favorite podcast show. And if you are a passionate swimmer like me, then make sure you head over to Effortless Swimming and at least do the 5-day catch challenge, because you're going to absolutely love it. And I'm sure you're going to shave some time off your lengths as well. So Brenton, thank you once again for being here, and look forward to doing this again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and love your podcast, and appreciate you having me on. I've really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for everyone listening, and we will see you in the next episode.